Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Well, welcome to the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. It's kind of we're missing a lot of guys, but I got Matt Michaels here with me. Hey, Matt, how are you, man?
What's up, DJ? And the DJ is gonna talk to the PJ, and it's gonna be all cool.
If I ever become a DJ, I'll be DJ PJ.
I know, right? That'd be awesome. Well, here, let me give you the proper introduction. Now, we've seen you in FCF, WWE, GFW, TNA, IWF South Africa, WWP, Lucha Underground, DWW, and now ROH. And you've had multiple titles, including the cruiserweight, the tag team, even the heavyweight championship. I mean, you've done it all, brother. And you know, we welcome you, PJ Black.
Thank you guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been a roller coaster ride of a career for me for sure. And I feel like I'm 5 years away from my prime, so I think my best work is still yet to come.
Oh, awesome.
Well, you know, that's the really interesting thing is now that primes just kind of keep getting longer and longer, you know?
Right.
Right.
But, you know,
and it's funny, too, because the wrestling keeps evolving, too. So, like, the age that we live in, it's a fantastic time right now. And, you know, I can almost feel it catching up to my body. But, like, there's so much talent out there. You just have to keep up. You know, you just put your head down and just keep going and evolving with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Did you see this? Like, I mean, you know, you started at a well young age, you know, at 16 years old. That's, like, I mean, it's mind-blowing because if you think about, you know, what it takes when you're 16 to do things and the maturity level and mm-hmm. all that goes into it, and then to be where you were at 26, it's mm-hmm. like you already had a decade under your belt.
Right.
Did some of it help from your upbringing or, you know, what gave you that, you know, that desire and fed you?
So, I grew up in the business, right? So my dad was a wrestler and a promoter. He ran two schools, and my granddad was a pro boxer and a promoter as well. So I kind of grew up in the business, and when I was 8 years old, I decided that that's what I wanted to do.
Wow.
So, you know, like in South Africa too, at the time, you had to be 18 to partake in professional sports. So I didn't tell my dad about this. I broke into the business with the other company, the opposition company, and I wore a mask and a wig, and I lied about my age, and that's how I started. But my dad found out about a year later, and he was like, "Well, you didn't get caught, so good job."
Right.
And I'm on all these shows.
What was the? I mean, obviously, you know, having the family experience is one thing because you're around the boys, you're around the locker room, you're around the atmosphere. Was there any wrestling on TV that wasn't local? Did Vince already have a market in South Africa at the time?
No, not yet. So the first ever show, WWE or WWF at the time, match that they aired on African television was WrestleMania 4 main event. You know, and obviously once that aired, like, all my friends were like, "Wow, this is the greatest thing ever." Because, I mean, they knew my dad was a wrestler, and they knew the local scene, and they loved it. And obviously at the time, I already had, like, WrestleMania 1, 2, and 3 on VHS at the time, and a bunch of New Japan stuff, and a bunch of, you know, stuff from around the world. So I became super popular in my school because all my friends wanted to borrow VHS tapes. And it kind of just grew from there. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that South Africa was an unofficial territory in the 80s and early 90s. You know, like, I watched Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan come job to a champion, and, you know, there was no dirt sheets back then or no YouTube, so people couldn't, like, look up the stuff.
Yeah.
And did you, you know, having these guys come into the territory. Did you get a chance because your dad was part of, you know, the local, you know, the one promotion? Did you get a chance to meet any of those guys at that time?
I did, but I was super young at that time. You know, like one of the first guys I can really remember like having conversations with was like Steve Regal and Drew McDonald, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Guys like that, like they used to come over and stay for like 6, 7, 8 months at a time. Actually, Undertaker is one of his first matches was in South Africa. Another guy, I don't know if you guys know this name, he used to wrestle as Giant Warrior. He was the original, I forget the tag team that he was in WCW, but he ended up staying for like 3 years in South Africa. And he was like the first guy that I really made friends with, and that I picked his brain every single day. And he actually lives in Vegas right now. He's retired, obviously, and we keep in contact. And he always calls me his unofficial son, because, like, you know, he met me when I was 7 years old and watched me grow up and watched me do all these things. So for him, it was kind of cool.
Wow,
nice.
Well, we're gonna have to talk a little bit more about that off air, and that would be a fascinating little interview to get him on too. That's pretty cool. Speaking about, I mean, Las Vegas, since you just brought up Vegas, we'll kind of jump around on different things here.
Totally.
How did the World Poker Tournament go?
So I messed up my lat that match I had. I tore a little muscle in my lat, so I pulled out of the tournament that I was going to play. But I'm heading there next week. This weekend I go to Chile. When I come back from Chile, I'm going to go, because the World Series is on for the next 65 days.
Okay.
You know, there's tons of different tournaments. They have all kinds of, you know, like from the high rollers to the mid rollers and the lower tournaments. And it goes for 65 days, and every day is a different tournament. So I still have time to play.
Nice. Oh, okay. Nice. And how long have you been playing poker? Because that,
it's not that long. Like I've probably been playing for like 6 or 7 years. I once took a year out because I wanted to be a pro, but I got injured, and like I spent way too much money. I got too cocky at the time. But I picked it up quickly. I legit just entered a competition, and that's how I learned. You know, like actually wrestling taught me how to read people, because it's all, again, it's psychology, right? And wrestling really is just storytelling and psychology. That's what and then we insert the moves and the promos and the character stuff later, you know?
Right.
So wrestling actually taught me how to read a table, how to read people, and like how to feel things. So it kind of just came naturally to me. I mean, I wish I started much younger, but it is what it is.
Well, and I think, though, you know, because I started playing when I was a little bit older too. I think it was about 35 when I started. And it's so much fun because of that. I have an acting background. So for me, it was the same thing. What I found fascinating was, as soon as you learn the, you know, traits of the game itself, the rules, how to play it, you know, the ins and outs of just the game, the fascinating thing is just watching these people and watching how they play. And it's just amazing, because it really is a character study, and you actually could find, you find cool things to take from these people too. Like, okay.
Right.
Yeah,
I've actually played some of my best cards in Vegas with the pros, because, you know, I've been watching the pros on TV for years. You know, like, and obviously they change the game up all the time, but I watch them all the time, and I was like, I know exactly what this guy would do in this position. And I mean, they still schooled me, but I that's probably the best I've ever played. It was a table full of pros.
That's awesome.
So, is there really something called a poker face? Is that really like?
It's a real thing. I'm a terrible one, and I kind of use wrestling to my advantage. Like I cannot hold a straight face. Mm. So what I try to do is deviate. I kind of like show the opposite face.
Yeah.
Which also sometimes is my downfall, because now that the pros know that I do that, so now I change it up constantly. Like.
No, that's a very good analogy, and I think that anyone who's listening who either is in wrestling or getting into wrestling, that is something to think about, you know. And it's not just like poker is one example. I think that if you're out at like a coffee shop or at a bar or, you know, at your grocery store, one of the things that helps is reading people and just taking a look.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a funny skill, or fun skill, that everyone can develop. And I developed it through wrestling, which is funny. But I mean, you know, like a lot of psychology majors and like a lot of sports psychology people, they teach that actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you look at where you were, you know, early on in your career, and you're wrestling in like the United Kingdom, you're wrestling in South Africa, are you, I guess, what is your goal at that point? Do you want to make a living at it, or do you want to try to transition to the WWE at some point?
When I was younger?
Yeah.
My goal was New Japan. Ever since I was a kid, my goal was New Japan. And, you know, I tried for years and years to get in there. It was really hard from South Africa because, you know, like, no South African has ever made it.
Right.
Although I thought I was good enough at the time, I sent tapes, you know, and I sent 8x10s, and I sent, like, you know, later in my life, little YouTube packages. Like, you know, I sent to everybody, you know. And eventually I got picked up by WWE, and I wasn't going to turn it down. And I was like, yeah, I'll go to developmental for a little while. And, the rest is history.
Nice. And, you know, on that road, before you got signed by WWE, who were the biggest influences, maybe one or two people, that took you from, you know, where you were as a, you know, a starting wrestler to someone who, you know, might have influenced you, might have showed you the ropes, whether it was on the road, you know, how to do things in the ring? Were there anyone, you know, that you were looking at that was kind of like a mentor figure outside of your family, obviously?
No one really specific person, not one specific person. There were quite a few, you know, like I take bits and pieces from everybody, and I pick people's brains. And one of the things, actually, when I got to FCW developmental at the time, and the guy that taught me the most, even more than my dad, even more than all my mentors and everything, was actually Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Nice.
At the time, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Steve Kern, Dusty Rhodes, Norman Smiley, those guys, man. I got so much out of those guys. More than, you know, I was already more than a decade into my wrestling career, but I already got more out of that, the first 2 months in FCW, than I did in that whole decade. Which is funny, because I grew up in the business, but it's just little things, you know?
Right. Right. And, you know, that's the one of the nicest things that I've, you know, been hearing recently from some of the guys we've been talking to, is compliments of guys like Kern and Norman Smiley, who you don't really hear much about. And I mean, Pritchard to me is one of the top guys you can learn from. And him and Kane getting a school together is an amazing, you know, thing. Here's two great minds. But it's really cool that, you know, that these guys were able to kind of help you and mold you. What was the experience like down there at FCW for you? Were you, you know, were the boys, you know, was everyone still in that, you know, that feeling out process of, like, you know, hey, who is this kid? Or did you already have a little bit of a name coming in?
Oh, no, like, totally. Like, when I got there, like, nobody knew who I was, you know. I was just another kid. And at the time, I was doing, like, the porn star gimmick. I was playing the good-looking, cocky guy, you know. When I got to FCW, there was, like, 60, 70 other dudes doing that. So I was like, oh, man, I got to, like, do something to stand out here. And this is how it worked back then, too. Like, whenever you get in, like, obviously the coaches don't know who you are. So the first day you get in there, and like, they pick the random guy, like, PJ, you and Heath, whatever, you guys get in the ring, do a 10-minute match so we can see what you guys have, you know?
Right.
And you kind of like had to work your way up onto getting onto a show. It just takes like 2, 3, 4, 5 months sometimes to get onto an actual developmental show. So my first day, I started the same day as Low Key. So Steve Kern goes, yeah, you, since you guys are here the first day, get in there, give me 10 minutes, let's see what you guys got. And we legit just like strong style the shit out of each other, like for like 10 minutes straight.
Oh,
and
man.
I think I gained Loki's respect. Till this day, he loves working me. But anyway, Dusty Rhodes was the main booker at the time. So Kern goes, he looks at Dusty, goes, Dusty, whoever you have as main event this Saturday, pull those kids and put these two on. So I was kind of lucky that, you know, right off the bat, they saw what I could do. But, you know, like the first few weeks too, I got there, like everyone was, I wouldn't say mean to me, but like kind of standoffish, because they didn't know. They just thought I was another dude, you know. And at the time, they find a lot of like ex-football players and a lot of other sports stars who just kind of came in for the paycheck at the time. So people probably thought I was one of them. And then once they saw it could work, it was like, oh, shit, like everyone became my friends.
Yeah. And who from that time frame, who are your closest friends that you've still, you know, are in touch with?
Heath Slater, obviously, Stu Bennett, yep. Wade Barrett, all the Nexus guys, with Dave Otunga. I actually had Dave Otunga's first ever match and his second match. We did a 10-way Broadway, both matches. Ryback, Tara, I'm really close with the Usos, really good friends of mine. Let's see, who else was down there with me? You know, a bunch of guys were down there with me. Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, right. All these guys were down there with me. We became closer much later, but at the time, probably Heath, Wade, and the Usos, like, probably like my best friends at the time. You know, like, I moved from South Africa, so I don't have my family here or anything. So right. Mm-hmm. Invited me for like Thanksgiving dinner and like Christmas and stuff at the time. So yeah, they'll be my family forever.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's something that I found, like, when I moved from Chicago to LA to pursue acting. It was exactly that feeling. Like, you have no one around you that is family, and yet you start finding, you know, these people who are nice enough to invite you in and to mm-hmm. have, you know, groups over, and all of a sudden you start forming these bonds that just are wonderful. And I think that's really important, especially in entertainment, because no matter,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're out on an island always, because you're literally fighting for your next job, and yep. you know, you, and everyone's competitive, and like you said, you know, that sounds right, people being a little standoffish when you first start, because they don't know if you're the competition, if you're an ally. It's such a, like, it's like starting a new high school, you know.
Yeah, pretty
exactly
much.
It's exactly like that. And it's always weird, because, you know, like, it's a different kind of sport. It's not a sport where you can pinpoint, but like, yo, this guy is the best. You know, we all have to work together to put on a good show. You know, like, it's two guys in the ring and the referee. It takes three guys to put on a good match. And like, for some people, they don't understand that. But a lot of people, you know, it clicks day one for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of LA, how are you liking living, like, right down there in the heart of LA?
Now? I love it. Oh, I love it, man. I'm downtown. I'm in Little Tokyo right now. Like, I just love it. Like, my plan was to just come here for season 3 of Lucha Underground, because we filmed here in the Arts District, and that was 4 years ago. I'm still here. Like, sold my house in Florida, sold everything I had, like literally everything. I sold the motorcycles, the jet skis, the trucks. I sold my furniture even. I just came with a backpack and my wrestling gear, came to LA.
And what is, I mean, do you have any favorite spots right now that you know, enjoy in terms of like cuisines, or, you know,
I'm a big foodie. I'm a massive foodie. And LA, I think, is number 3 in the world, right?
Yeah.
As far as a foodie city, mm-hmm. I love it. I like the food trucks. I love trying different things. Even like vegan restaurants. I'm not a vegan or anything, but there's some fantastic vegan restaurants downtown. And like, you know, like it's so multicultural. Like, if you feel like proper authentic Chinese food, I can literally just walk to get it.
Yeah.
I feel like some really good Indian food, I can walk to get it. That's one of my favorite things about the city, that it's so multicultural and you can find literally any food on the planet.
Yeah. So if you're a foodie, then that means you have a major workout you go through, right? A workout routine.
I have to limit myself sometimes, you know, like I'll splurge every once in a while, but yeah, I gotta like watch my calories and obviously work out every day, otherwise it's not gonna look good for me.
Well, you know, that there's listen, I mean, you're in a business where you got guys like Beer City, you know.
Right.
Like, if you just make that your gimmick, hey, you're good.
I know, right? I thought about it. Trust me, I thought about it multiple times.
How's ROH treating you? I know that, you know, it's been really nice watching, you know, your evolution since you've debuted with them, and you know, we're big supporters and fans of ROH ourselves. So awesome. Has it been a nice little adjustment? Has it given you the freedoms that you thought you were going to get when you were signing with them?
Yes, and so much more. You know, like, the creative freedom is fantastic. They've given me right off the bat a couple of marquee matches at the pay-per-views and stuff like that. I'm sure you guys have watched that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like, I had to push myself a little bit further than I'm used to for a little while. And, you know, like, working guys like Bandito and Rush, these guys are incredible. Like, the pace is so quick, but mm-hmm. they're also good at everything, every other aspect of the wrestling game, you know, like telling stories, which to me is the most important thing.
Yep.
But also, obviously also the spots, like, it plays a big role these days, Nick, you know, because if you can tell a story with good action-packed spots, like, that to me is like, that's the pinnacle, you know. And yeah, it's been very good. Like, the travel has been good. I've been pushing myself a little bit hard, like, I was dealing with some injuries, but luckily, like, the dates are much easier than you know, the other companies. So, like, right. I get to rest, like, every other weekend I get to rest, and mm-hmm. like, I'm like, when I do rest, I'm like, yeah, can I wait for next weekend, because I'm going to go hard, you know, I don't hold anything back, and they let me do that too, which is great. So, like, I'm very happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's, you know, one of our local favorites is Jeff Cobb, and, you know, how can you not like being in, like, guys like Cobb and Marty, and, you know, these guys are just, it's like,
just killing it right now.
Yeah. And it's, and what I like too is, I think that you all tend to have the same mentality from, you know, talking to everyone and just kind of getting a feel, you know, and you're a little bit of the, you know, the veteran, you know, having a little more time in than some of these guys, but it just is nice that everyone seems to have that mentality of working with each other to tell the stories, not to push my own agendas. And it shows. It's beautiful.
Exactly. And I mean, it does happen every once in a while here, but like you said, everyone works together. Like, I'll get my stuff in, but I'll let you get your stuff in too. Together we work, you know, like, and what I like about ROH is, like, not like other TV companies where if you're the first match, you're not allowed to go outside, no dives allowed, you're not allowed to do, there's a list of moves that you cannot do. Legit ROH, they were like, just trying to steal the show every single time. And I'm like, okay, this is what I'm good at. I can do this.
Yeah.
exactly. And, you know, now is it, how interesting has it been to you, the difference of, you know, here you are, you've established PJ Black over the years, but yet Justin Gabriel as the most known or most seen character.
I know, it's funny, isn't it?
It's crazy to me because, you know, it's funny that, you know, it's kind of like looking at the Munsters, and Fred Gwynn always was looked at as Herman Munster. And it's like, this guy was a good actor. He could do other things, but he was never given that opportunity to show. And I think that happened to a lot of the guys, you know, who were with the WWF back in the 80s, who really couldn't get out of that, you know, like, you were always going to be the big boss man, no matter if you tried to be someone else, they pigeonholed you. But you've done a great job as, you know, reestablishing yourself into the PJ Black character itself. Have you enjoyed being able now to kind of, like, you know, and it's been a while since the Justin Gabriel character, but you've had time to now develop and breathe and bring more of what you want to it. Is this something that is ultimately, you know, a better place for you, I guess, in terms of allowing you to, you know, emotionally develop, you know, this character that you've had ties to since you were a kid?
Yes. Well, I mean, my dad started calling me PJ Black when I was 14 years old because I went through that emo stage where I painted my room black and stuff like that. And, you know, so that name just kind of stuck ever since I was 14. And for me to be PJ Black right now and trying to you know, my goal when wrestling is all said and done, like, I don't care about, like, championships and working for this company and that. I just want people to remember PJ Black instead of Justin Gabriel. And I feel like it's slowly starting to happen, you know, like you said, Justin Gabriel is better known because he was on international TV for 5, 6, 7 years, and, you know, PJ Black has been really independent and, you know, like, comes from a third world country.
Yeah.
I mean, although he's been around for 15 years, like, only now, like, people, like, you know, every once in a while, like, a kid will still call me Justin Gabriel, but, like, it's kind of phasing out. Like, right now, like, everyone is, like, calling me PJ Black, and, like, they love the PJ Black stuff that I'm doing right now, and it's pretty cool, you know, because that's my goal right now.
Well, what's really interesting about that, too, is, you know, when you think of Justin Gabriel, it was such a clean cut, you know, for lack of a better word, boy band or vanilla type presence.
Yep.
And it's what's really cool is that you, in your look, in your persona, in your in-ring style as well, you have grown into this where I think this is much more memorable and much more, you know, shows who you are and also gives the audience, I think, a better character choice than, you know, something that was essentially, and again, I don't want to put any words or I'm not bad mouthing anyone, but when you have, and this is, I guess, being an actor, perspective comes of when you have writers who don't understand the characters, you just,
right,
you don't get the meat that you need. But when you're able to be someone who has control of your character, but also understands what that means, that's when it's
right.
Magic.
And it's hard for people to tell them, like, yo, this is how you have to play the character. And for a lot of guys, that works right off the bat.
Right.
For some guys, that doesn't always click like that, you know? And, like, I love WWE. Like, I'll never say anything bad about them. But they do over, like, micromanage everything, yeah, you know, like, from your character to the promo to the matches to what you wear sometimes. Like, you know, every once in a while someone breaks free and they get away with it. And every once in a while someone gets given the shittiest character ever and they just blow it up, you know? And to me, that's what's cool about wrestling. But yeah, like you said, like, now I just get to do my own thing, especially, like, promos. Like, you know, not a lot of people, I'm not known as a promo guy, but, like, I do kind of pretty good promos. They just let me, you know, because I'm very, very different to most people, like you said. And I feel like in developmental, everyone kind of, it becomes like a cookie cutter in some way, which is it's not nobody's fault. It's just that's the system, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty cool to have full control, creative control of whatever I do, say, where, and yeah, like, I can't wait for you guys to see the next evolution of PJ Black. There's so much more to come. It's going to be like a year process of
nice.
Different things,
mm-hmm.
and you know that I never used to plan that far ahead. I used to just do the show, whatever was asked of me on the day or the weekend or whatever, but like I kind of plan it out a year in advance, so like I'm really excited about the stuff coming up.
Yeah, see, I think you just said one of the biggest keys, and that is and this is, you know, what we try to do with this podcast, this is what I try to do in my life, and that is you always want to look, you want to have a year or two out, because in entertainment that's the way to path it out, because
right.
you know, if you're just scratching for, you know, the next scraps, the dinner is never going to be fulfilling. But if you lay out this big menu, by the time you get to the end of the finished product, it's golden, and you're ready to you know, prepare something new again, you know, reinvention and furthering yourself. And I think that's exciting to hear that you're on that road.
Right, totally. And I mean, it could go both ways. It's different for different people. Some guys are okay with 15 years playing the same character, wearing the same gear, you know, and it's kind of like a nostalgia thing, like, you know, when after like a 3 or 4 year break, if they come back and, you know, people will remember that from their childhood or their teenage years or when they used to watch wrestling with their dads. Like, right. I love the nostalgia effect of wrestling too, but like I said, it can go either way. For some guys, it works. But some guys have to evolve with the business and adapt. You know, like, not everyone is as lucky as some of the guys that can just wear the same stuff their whole life and still be over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's absolutely true. And it's, you know, it's an interesting, you know, perspective, because I think that some of the, you know, feedback you hear from fans nowadays is, oh, you know, turn John Cena back to heel, you know, and it's like, but why? Because you want that nostalgia. That's all you want. And it's like, that's not helping anyone here if you just want him to be something he was 15 years ago. And with that, here's my next follow-up on you. You are in L.A. You do have a great personality and a great presence and a great promo ability. Are you pursuing, and I know you've had a modeling career, are you pursuing the acting end of things yet?
No, not at all. It's not something, I've done a couple of like straight to DVD films, and it's not something I'm passionate about.
Okay.
Like right now at the stage in my life, I just do stuff that makes me happy. Like I'm okay with like money and stuff like that. I just do stuff that I'm passionate about, that makes me smile, it makes me happy and stuff like that. I've done a couple of movies, and like John Morrison has written a couple of movies, and if it's some of my friends and they have projects like that, I no problem. I'll help out and play a little small part. Johnny's got some awesome short films coming out, actually, which you guys will be super excited about.
Nice.
But you know, like that was basically playing me or playing a character that I can relate to, something that's fun. And for me, just hanging out on set with my friends. Like if I had to hang out on set with and I didn't know anybody, that's not fun. You know,
right.
Like that's not something that I'm passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
I love behind the scenes stuff. I invest in my friends' like little movie projects and stuff like that. I'm actually a really good editor too. Like I'm good at Photoshop, Premiere Pro, After Effects, stuff like that.
Nice.
I'll help out with some graphics and stuff here and there. But yeah, in front of the camera, it's not something that I'm super passionate about, unless it's something I wrote.
Sure.
Acting, it's funny because everyone's like, you're in LA, you must be an actor, right? Like I'm like, no, that's really not my passion. There's actually a lot of other things in LA too. Like I also invest in a lot of startup companies, a lot of tech companies, and in the cannabis industry and stuff like that, and there's massive opportunities in LA for all of that.
Oh, you're talking my language now, brother. No, I mean, that's, you know what, that's funny because you look at what it was with the medical marijuana was, you know, there were all these different stores and stuff, but now that the opportunity is finally, you know, there's not the stigma to it anymore. And Las Vegas is seeing the same thing too, you know, where it's like,
it was a quick change in Vegas.
Like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Quick. Oh yeah. Well, I think, you know what? I think they were ready for it. I think everyone saw it coming, you know, in advance.
Yeah.
So,
and they have all the money there.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think in LA, what they didn't realize is that it was going to cause problems in the initial, you know, transfer over. So I think they were a little bit behind. You know, it's a growing industry. And I think that getting in on the ground is a great idea. And that shows, again, your smarts of, you know, not just investing in your, you know, in yourself, in your wrestling career, but knowing what you're passionate about and then taking those risks and opportunities to make yourself happy. I think that's the key, is making yourself happy. And that's freaking amazing.
Totally. Like I'll always be a sports entertainer first, you know, but like, I'm an entrepreneur, like I'm a businessman. So like I do a bunch of other stuff outside of wrestling. I mean, wrestling always be my number one passion. Oh, quickly. I'll try and tell you the short version how I got into the cannabis industry. Never touched it until I moved to LA, by the way. I was a heavy drinker back in the day, you know, like I took, I'm not proud of to say this, but you know, pain pills, I was hooked on that, like all kinds of stuff. And a couple of years ago, I don't know if you guys remember, I broke both my legs base jumping twice.
Yep.
So I was in the hospital and I refused to take the opiates that they gave me because I lost a lot of friends to opiates.
Yep.
So
yeah.
I started doing some research on alternative medicine, holistic medicine, and herbs and stuff like that. And I came across CBD, and that's how I was introduced into the cannabis industry. You know, CBD, THC helped me tremendously. And ever since that day in the hospital, I haven't touched a drink since. I've never touched a pain pill since.
Yeah.
I'll smoke weed every once in a while here. Once in a while, almost every day. But CBD has helped me.
Who's counting?
Has helped me like tremendously. You know, like I don't. It was kind of like my cannabis was my gateway to sobriety. Like usually people think it's the other way around, but
mm-hmm.
it's really helped me out so much in every aspect of my life.
Well, what's really interesting, I've been a smoker for probably over 20 years or so, since my college days. And the thing that I found was a couple of parallels what you said. I trained at UPW in the early 2000s, and
oh, nice.
It was fun. It was a great time, and something that was not, you know, not a career but a hobby. You know, this way I wouldn't regret it. And one of the things I found myself doing was using marijuana, which at that time was still illegal in California. So you had to, you know, still do all the sneaking and the closing of blinds and all that good stuff. And it was the only thing, you know, I went from being, you know, a quote unquote pot smoker to actually using it smartly in terms of being able to deal with pain. And
right, it's a medicine, you know. Yep. Like I know a lot of people that it helps with depression, anxiety, yep. PTSD. There's so many forms of PTSD right now, and like all my friends benefit from it. It's really a wonderful medicine.
Yeah, and we just talked recently to RVD specifically for like an hour about, you know, depression and mental health, and mm-hmm. you know, part of, you know, what we talked about was the fact that, you know, he was a little bit of ahead of his time. He didn't even realize it, is that, you know, this was actually kind of helping him without, you know, him being aware. And now as more studies come out and the industry grows, I think you're going to find, you know, not only is it beneficial to you, you know, in your career in helping these injuries and keeping you, you know, level and feeling, you know, better. Cause I know alcohol destroyed me. I was at the point.
Same.
I still look, and it's funny because, you know, my dad will, you know, have his beers and stuff, and then he'll get to a point every once in a blue moon where he's just kind of a little skunked. And it's just like, I just can't do it anymore because I don't like feeling like that. And it's
and there's nothing wrong with having a whiskey here and there,
yeah.
Like some beers and stuff like that. Like I was misusing it, you know, like I was it's terrible. And any drug can be misused, or alcohol, or anything, you know, like even aspirin can be misused.
Oh, yeah.
It just that depends on the user.
Exactly. With the skydiving accident, did you? I know a lot of people, you know, even when you get hurt in wrestling, or when, you know, you have some kind of injury, with it being as extreme as it was, were you ever mentally blocked at thinking, you know what, I probably won't do this again? Or were you focused on, you know, once I get better, once I'm mended up, I'm definitely going back out?
It was a little bit of both. At the time, I was blocked. Even getting back into wrestling a year later, I was out for a year, by the way, and the doctors told me I'll never wrestle again. It took me 10 months to relearn how to walk. When I started walking in a swimming pool, I legit thought, I was like, yeah, there's no way I'm ever going to walk again, because it was so, so painful, and my muscles in my legs atrophied completely. It was just the bone, basically. And I was like, yeah, at that time, I was like, yeah, this is never going to happen. But at the same time, I was like, you know, the doctors told me I'll never wrestle again, so I like to prove people wrong, so here I go. I'm just going to put my head down, and I just started working as hard as I could, you know, and then look at me. I feel like I'm doing the best work of my life right now. You know, like it's been a long process for sure. It took about a year or two for me to get back to 100%. But even that year, that first year, it was like a mental block. It was like, till this day, I cannot do a backflip or like a moonsault from the top rope and land on my feet. Because it's a mental block. Physically,
right.
I know I can do it, but it's like a mental block, right?
Mm.
So I just recently started doing that and slow. I'm like, okay, yeah. So I feel like that mental block takes a long time to get over, you know, and I feel like slowly but surely I am. As far as the skydiving stuff, like I don't think they'll base jump a building again, because that's both times I got hurt on a building.
Right.
Base jumping is very, very dangerous. Skydiving is very safe, actually.
Right.
People don't realize, like, you might twist an ankle here and there, or like, you know, like bust your finger maybe on a landing, but that's about it.
Right.
Like, skydiving is super safe. It's base jumping that's very, very, very dangerous. And like I thought about it too, like I haven't been base jumping, I'm back in the sky, I did about 30 or 40 jumps this year.
Nice.
I want to jump a bridge again, just so I can. I even just want to jump that building that I got hurt on, just to say, like, you know, like, I don't want that building to have something over me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, so, of course.
Yeah, but only time will tell. Like, I need to do one or two jumps, but I'll obviously approach it way different than I did when I got injured. And but yeah, let's see what happens. Like, right now, I'm open minded to it. But skydiving, yeah, I'm back in the sky, flying wingsuits again. I love that. That's another passion of mine. Once you've flown with the birds and flew through clouds with a wingsuit, man, like, it's like nothing else matters on the planet almost. Like, for a while, I was forgetting about wrestling. I was like, oh man, this is what I want to do. I want to be a pro. I want to be sponsored by Red Bull. You know, I'm going to go around the world. But and I actually made friends with a lot of the Red Bull athletes, and you know, they become really good friends of mine. But those guys have been skydiving since they were 16 years old. Just right. Like I've been wrestling since I was 16, so I feel like I have a long, long way to catch up to these dudes. You know, they have 20, 30, 40,000 jumps, some of these guys. You know, I'm on 1,000 jumps right now, which to a normal person that sounds like a lot, but right. To become a pro, that's very far away.
PG, I got to ask you, did you say you want to jump a bridge again?
I do want to jump a bridge. Bridges are pretty safe because there's nothing to hit, you know, like buildings, that's dangerous. So base jumping is an acronym for base stands for building, antenna, fan, which is like a bridge, mm-hmm. or earth. Those are the four fixed objects that you can jump from. A bridge is pretty safe because you can, you know, like obviously it's low, but like as long as you open immediately, you're fine. There's nothing to strike. Buildings are a little bit more tough, and like mountains are tough if it's low, but like some of the mountains that I've jumped like 4,000 foot, and that's a skydive, so man, they were pretty easy, and you can fly away from the mountain with like a tracking suit or a wingsuit. it's pretty easy. I mean, people still get hurt and die on those, but it's not as often as like, say, like a building, you know?
PJ, I'm gonna tell you, all I do is curb jumping, and I do pretty good. I do pretty good at that, man. You know, I've I think I injured myself maybe once.
Oh, man. Do you jump up on the curb and act like you're like rail sliding in on a skateboard?
Right. Hey, man, you got to start from somewhere, okay?
Right, exactly.
What would you say are some of your what would you say were some of your fondest memories? Not necessarily, you know, from wrestling itself, but from the journey you've taken now, you know, over the past almost 25 years.
Yeah, wow, that's tough, man. That, I mean, I've had so many good memories inside the ring, outside of the ring. For me, it's just fun hanging out with the boys and traveling, you know. Like, I'll never forget those international tours that we did in WWE. We did like 18 shows in 18 days, and then flying back to the U.S. and doing another four TVs, you know. That to me was fun. There's a few places on the planet that I love going to. I've wrestled in 62 countries. I actually sat down the other day and jotted it down. I go to Chile this weekend, which will be my first. So that's another country.
Awesome.
But yeah, man, I can vividly remember all those countries. Dubai will always be a fun place for me. Vegas will always be a fun place for me. I've wrestled in 48 states too. I'm missing Vermont and Montana. I have a feeling I'm going to have to run my own shows in those states.
Probably.
I'm very blessed. I've had so many good memories. And now that I'm older too, like, I get to go to these places like Chile this weekend, for instance. In WWE, it was always like in and out, get on a plane, you know, go to the hotel. You see the gym, you see the airport, you see the hotel and the arena. That's all you saw. Now I take a couple of days here and there, and I'm like, a lot of these places I've been to, but like, I always ask if I can come in a day earlier or stay a day later so I can go do the touristy things and the fights and stuff like that. You know, so I'm taking a completely different approach that I did. You know, but it's understandable. When I was young, when I was like 26, 27, all I wanted to do was like just wrestle, party, party, wrestle, party.
Yeah.
Now it's just about building experiences and moments, you know, like going to Santiago this weekend. I'm like, that's so cool. I'll be Googling stuff, like touristy things to do. I'm going to have the best possible match that I can, but I also want to take away from the city and remember it.
That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, that's, I think, the number one thing that I've always heard from any of my friends who are in the business is, and entertainment too, when you're out on the road and, you know, doing what you do as a performer, it really is, you know, bus or plane, hotel, gym, or rehearsal hall event onto the next one. And it's such a weird, fantastic journey. But you know what? The other thing you said is the partying. Because I know, I mean, Lord knows, I've been handed, you know, so many tequilas and whiskeys in my life.
Yeah.
It's just like, because there's no other way to wind down from that high that you get.
Sure, right.
Totally. Yeah, totally, man. I agree. And, you know, that's what's so hard for me to say no to booze these days, you know, because, yeah. You know, everyone drinks and has a drink here and there. I went out with the ROH guys the other day, and, you know, like, they know I don't drink, so everyone was doing shots of tequila, and they got me a shot of water, and I thought that was, like, the coolest thing ever.
Ah,
and, like,
that's brilliant.
Didn't want me to feel left out, and I'm still one of the boys, and they respected my decision to do that instead of peer pressing me to do something. So, and I was like, oh, wow, I'm home, you know? Like, it was one of my first days on the road, too, so I just felt like a camaraderie and, like, a brotherhood there, and I was like, yep, I'm home right now. I love it. I love the whole ROH thing that I'm doing right now.
Hey, that's by awesome. The way, PJ, let me tell you, doing a shot of water is perfectly fine. I get beat up a lot by even the guys here. Luckily, they're not here because they'll laugh at me. Because even when I go out and I'm at a bar, I'll say, hey, you got a virgin daiquiri? And they're looking at me like, are you serious? You know? But, you know, hey, I agree. Water, a virgin drink, is just something that tastes good, works better, and, you know, keeps you... you know, mentally in the game, you know?
Right. And it's tough. It's really hard, you know, because, I used to be one of those guys who tried to peer pressure my friends into drinking and doing stuff
sure.
that I didn't want to.
Yep.
So, like, now that everyone's kind of respecting my decision, I'm like, oh, wow, it could have gone the other way for me, you know? But I really like that people are so respectful of people's decisions these days.
Well, you know, and that's it's a weird evolution because I know if you think back to, you know, we're close in age, and if you think back to where you were in like the early 2000s, it was a totally different culture and environment because it was like you were just partying to keep up with everyone else partying. And it was just like...
Right, exactly.
You also, you know, at that age, when you're in your early 20s and going into your early 30s, you tend to just kind of throw life itself out the door and like, fuck it, I'm good. You know, no one can touch me. I'll be fine.
Right. And you sleep it off. Like, you never used to get hangovers. And like, as soon as you get older, you start getting hangovers. And you're like, wait a minute, so I got to rethink this because I got to perform tonight and I feel like dog shit.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the old days. I know I could get it, you know, I could, you know, do a shift at work, get off at like 8 p.m., you know, working at Universal Studios Hollywood, doing tour guiding. It was fun. It was the easiest thing because you just sat and gave a spiel for, you know, 6 tours during the day. And then you go out and you drink for, you know, the next 4 or 5 hours, find someone, hook up. Have a good night. They leave at 4 a.m. and you got a shift starting in 3 hours. And it was like, okay, shower up, throw on a uniform, go out. You're fine.
Right. Yep. We've all been there.
Yeah. You know, and nowadays it's like 10 o'clock hits, get my weed, realize I'm not going to be in pain tonight. You know, the
blood. Wind down, watch some wrestling. Like.
Yep, exactly. Yep. And then it's like, yeah. And then the morning, I never feel like shit, which is amazing.
Right.
Because I know when I hit that point where, you know, I was still doing a couple bottles of whiskey and, you know, partying, and all of a sudden, you start waking up with that hangover. And then... My biggest thing was when I started realizing that I was just doing too much, and I was never a puker. And that first time I puked, and it was like, okay, this is not fun at all anymore.
Yeah,
this is stupid. Right. Let me just. And I don't look at anyone else for, you know, for their choices either. I think that's the other thing you kind of learn.
Yeah,
is. You know, as long as you don't see them doing any danger to themselves or others, you know, then
exactly. And if they make it to the gym on time, they make it to the show on time, there's
exactly.
no problem with that. Like, you know, I was skipping gym days and I was like, wait a minute, like, and then I was eating junk food and, like, you know, skipping gym days and eating junk food, missing gym for like a week, 10 days at a time. I was like, wait a minute, I gotta do some adjustments here. And it took an accident for me to realize all these things,
yeah.
But you know, that's, I think that's how it usually happens, but people have an epiphany company once something bad in their lives happen, or like a drastic event or something. And, you know, I say this all the time. That was the worst thing that's ever happened to me in my life, but it was also the best thing to ever happen to me in my life.
Yeah, and I think people can take a cue from that, that something that you look at as something that might be, you know, a bad thing that happened to you is not the end of the chapter. You keep writing the book, and, you know, and encourage those people who think that, you know, maybe, you know, they're in a position where they can't do something or can't, you know, find out their way out of this hole, that there's light. You know, you just got to focus and be positive about it.
Yeah.
Yep, yep, exactly. And for some people, it takes a little bit longer to learn those lessons. And some people, you know, learn it very young. I wish I learned it when I was much younger, but that's life. I feel like Earth is we're put here to learn lessons. Because if you think about it, mm-hmm. not one person has it easy on this planet. Like, even the richest people, or like the most successful people, they all have different struggles, different things, lessons that they have to learn on this planet. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately, actually. Like, maybe we're just put on this Earth to learn as many lessons as possible. So, like, you can choose to learn from that mistake or whatever it was. Like, you can choose to learn, or you can just choose to have that in the back of your mind and always regret it and stuff like that, you know. And that's what makes us stronger people, stronger humans, you know. You learn from that lesson and you evolve and you move forward.
Just getting to hear that you're at where you are now,
yeah,
it's just wonderful. Because I know, like I said, you know, I go back with a lot of, you know, different guys in different areas of entertainment, not just pro wrestling. And I know that when you start hitting that phase where you're seeing things clearly and where you want to go and getting a little more control in your career, it's an amazing feeling. And I'm just, like, so happy to see you, because you've always had that talent, man. And now getting to see you. Oh, yeah.
And it's been tough. It's been, because I was out for a year, right? And it took me another year to get, like, my footing back and stuff like that. And I feel like a lot of people wrote me off. So I had to work extra hard to kind of, like, get back into it, you know? Like, even now, people are like, this kid comes up to me the other day. He's like, oh, man, you still got it. I'm like, yeah, I kind of never lost it. I was injured, maybe I lost it for a year or two, but I'm back now, kid.
Right.
Oh, man. Well,
I'm just happy that people get to see how much effort I put into this and how hard I work to get back to that, you know. Like, I like telling my story. That's why I do every single podcast I can these days, and I do every interview just to get my story out there.
Well, and I think it's important. I think that, you know, for people to hear it and understand it and to get inspired by it, that's the coolest thing, is because it's, you know, it's something that's inspirational. And I think that's something that, you know, you might not even know that you're probably helping someone out right now, but you probably are at least touching one person to, you know, achieve their goals, or to, you know, maybe take a different direction and, you know, find things that they, about themselves, they've never, you know, realized. And I think that's amazing.
Totally. And if I can just affect one person, that would make me happy, you know. And I mean, I get messages on social media daily on that, so that just makes me happy every single time I read those messages.
And PJ, what is your, just so everyone know, your social media, how can you be reached?
Yeah, I'm very active on Instagram. It's PJ450. I'm active on pretty much all social medias, but if you go to my website, pjblack.com, mm-hmm. all the links to my social media will be there. There'll be some cool merch, this little fitness blog, a little wrestling blog, links to my YouTube page.
Okay.
So that'll probably be the easiest. Everything will be on pjblack.com.
Awesome. Hey, man, again, thank you so much, man. We definitely appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for your time. I have my ass, and I hope to see you guys in Vegas next week.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.